John is going to lecture on Thursday and Tuesday. Is that right? And then I'm going to lecture on Thursday and Tuesday after that. And then I think Grégoire is going to give a lecture at some point. So the schedule will be a little bit mixed up. So I wanted to return to talk about the existence and uniqueness of optimal mappings in the Monge-Kantorovich problem with more general costs. And so I remind you of the duality relationship, which we sketched at least a formal proof for this, that the minimum of the integral, say, cxy d gamma, over all gammas having given marginals nu into nu, and a cost so this inf was supposed to be equal to the soup So this is over some class of functions u and v that depends on the cost. And so I wanted to sketch, I want to sketch an argument which, under suitable assumptions on the cost, tells you that, gives you that the optimal gamma, which achieves this infimum, is actually supported on the graph of a mapping. And at the same time, as a byproduct of the argument, we're going to get that the soup is attained and equals the inf. And so the argument is sort of due to Gangbo. And I'm going to make various simplifying assumptions. So I'm going to assume, for simplicity, compact support from mu into nu. So, for example, there are some sets X and Y which contain mu and which are compactly contained in Rn. And I'm going to assume that the cost is Lipschitz on X cross Y. And e.g., so I'll just give the Lipschitz constant. Of course, it's jointly Lipschitz, but let me give the Lipschitz constants on X and on Y different names, LX and LY. And I need some structural assumption on the cost also. And so what seems to be important for existence and uniqueness arguments is in some sense that the mixed partial of the cost be non-degenerate. So I need some for uniqueness. Right, what it's sort of equivalent to the last thing I wrote is that S push forward mu equals nu, and identity cross S push forward mu equals gamma. And actually, Najma has looked at making this condition precise in one dimension. I'm not going to be too precise, but I'm going to state some. So this is typically so we still don't, by the way, know necessary and sufficient conditions for this kind of argument to work. But anyhow, so examples of costs that have the kind of non-degeneracy I'm looking for are with H strictly convex. And so that implies that the mixed partial is, I guess, minus the Hessian of H. And this is sort of strictly, this is non-negative definite everywhere, except that somehow accepted infinite distance, which never comes up for us, for our compactly supported measures. And a second example is, for which this argument can also be made to work, is a cost which is strictly concave, non-increasing. Non-decreasing, rather. Radial functions. And what's going on here is that maybe I should give this a different name. If I look at the second mixed derivative of the cost this time, well, I want to say I get something like if this is h of xy, I also get minus d2h of xy, And this time this matrix is non-positive definite, and so I get something like this, except the cut locus. I mean, except where x equals y. Where this thing blows up. Basically because this is something like a square root, and so it has an infinite derivative at zero, or certainly a bad second derivative at zero. It blows up. And so somehow the diagonal would play a special role with respect to these kinds of costs. And let me let me remark why the mixed partial is kind of a natural thing to look at in terms of this cost, and also a remark about the positivity condition. So for this kind of duality story to make sense and have a finite value, a necessary condition is that there had better exist a U and a V which satisfy this relationship here, and for which this soup here has some non-ambiguous non-minus infinity value. And so for the soup and the so this is all part of this. I need there exists a U and a V such that the negative part of U is integrable with respect to mu. And similarly, the negative part of V is integrable with respect to nu. That prevents this being minus infinity. And and moreover, once I have such a U and a V, notice that minimizing the cost C should be equivalent to minimizing the cost this thing here, and because when I integrate this against a measure gamma with marginal mu, it shouldn't depend on gamma, it should only depend on mu, and when I integrate this term against a measure gamma with right marginal nu, the result I get shouldn't depend on gamma, it should only depend on nu. And moreover, because these things are in the set phi c, this is automatically a positive cost. And so in some sense, restricting my attention to positive costs shouldn't involve much laws of generality. And moreover, so as far as this minimization problem is concerned, it's invisible to changes to the cost that take this form. And moreover, this mixed partial is also invisible to changes of this form. So if I call this thing C tilde, And so it's somehow natural that that the appropriate condition should be something about the mixed partial. So anyhow, to give you the flavor of the argument, I'm probably going to concentrate on the strictly convex case, example one up there. Okay. So existence and uniqueness of maps in case one. And under these simplifying hypotheses here. And so the first thing I want to do is I want to argue directly that actually this supremum is attained. And not only that, but it's attained by functions of a special form. And this is going to be closely related to the theory of Legendre transforms for convex functions. So a convex function had a dual convex function that I got through some duality procedure, and I want to generalize those transforms from costs of the form x dot y to costs of the form c of x y. And so so I want to first argue the soup is attained. By a pair of functions U tilde V tilde and phi C, which moreover satisfy V tilde of Y is what I call a C transform of U. And that's defined to be the soup over all x and capital X, cxy minus uc. So it's just like a Legendre transform, except I replace this more general object by the inner product between xy by some general cost, which is, for example, given by a strictly convex function of the distance. And u tilde should simultaneously be the C transform of V, which is given by the same formula except with X and Y interchanged and capital X and Y interchanged. So there's a slight abuse of notation going on here. Which is that this C transform is slightly different from this one, but they would actually be the same operation if x was equal to y, which I can always achieve by I may not want to achieve it, but I can achieve it by taking these two compact sets to be larger. And if C is equal to minus, I mean C of xy is equal to C of yx would slight abuse of notation unless this. But I'm not going to worry about this abuse of notation very much. If you go through the arguments, you find out it doesn't matter whether these are actually the same operation or not. okay. And the thanks. This matters. And, right. And so the main observation is that if U and V are in phi C, then U, you see is also in phi c, and moreover, so that whenever I take, okay, so let's see, why is this true? So the proof is just from the definition of UC. now I've made some disasters. Okay, so here I'm minimizing, here I'm maximizing. So actually the relationship is that U of X is always less than or equal to C minus VY, and so probably I want these soups to be in. And, okay, I'll do a little bit of the proof, and then I will come back and sort of give the heuristic picture of how I know these soups are really supposed to be ints, and what it all means. So, so U of CY is an infimum. That's C of XY minus UX. And because U and V satisfy this relationship here, the thing in the infimum is bigger than V of Y for each X. And so in particular, the infimum is bigger than V of Y. And so that shows this thing here. And on the other hand, since this is an infimum, UC of Y is less than C of XY minus U of X for every X in X. And so this says that UC is in phi C, provided the definition of phi C should be adapted to this X, X, and Y. So that's one of the main observations, is that whenever I have a candidate solution, I can always replace it by a function and its conjugate. And because of this thing here, doing the replacement, and since I'm trying to maximize, doing the replacement only increases the value. So I'm trying to maximize some function J of UV, and notice J of UV is less than J of UU conjugate, and so the maximum improves. And the other thing that I need to notice is that further observations. UC is a Lipschitz function. On Y with Lipschitz constant. Lipschitz constant LY. So in other words, it inherits the Lipschitz property directly from the cost and the definition. And this is true even if U is pretty wild. So this is more or less true as long as this infimum is not minus infinity. No smoothness is required on U. And so so what else? The other thing that I want to observe is that U is always less than or equal to its own second transform. And proper U, so U should not be identically. Yeah, with not identically minus infinity. And then, so hopefully at the end, so I'm going to talk about strictly convex H, and then I'm going to talk about, maybe I won't even talk about strictly concave functions of the distance, but someone should, maybe Sarah or someone should remind me at the end to talk about what happens in the case when it degenerates to being convex but not strictly convex, to sort of connect it with the discussion that we had last week about the other limit, which of the cost equals distance. So let's see. UC is defined as an infimum, and what's the point? I guess the point is that it's for each fixed x, this is a uniformly Lipschitz function of y, whose Lipschitz constant is given by Ly. And whenever I take an infimum of uniformly Lipschitz functions of y, I can't get anything that isn't Lipschitz with the same constant, unless I get minus infinity. So So the proof of the Lipschitz property. This infimum is actually bigger than C of xn y minus uxn minus 1 over n. So given any integer, I can find an xn which almost achieves this infimum. And on the other hand, depending on y. On the other hand, UCy prime is given by an infimum like this, and so it's less than C of xn y prime minus U of xn. And when I subtract these two guys, the UXNs are going to fall out, and therefore UCY minus UCY prime is going to be, well, maybe I want to do it this way, is going to be less than or equal to CXN Y prime minus CXNY plus 1 over n. And this is true for all n. And the only hitch here, as long as this as long as this inf isn't minus infinity, otherwise we need to write this a slightly different way. And so I'm on a compact set. So this is less than, I don't even need to worry about compactness. So by the Lipschitz property, this is less than Ly y prime minus y plus 1 over n for every n, and hence taking the limit to infinity, I get that this is less than this as advertised. So of course I can make this tells me a one-sided Lipschitz bound, but I could have made the same argument starting from y prime instead of y, I would get the opposite Lipschitz bound, unless u c of y prime equals minus infinity, and then you need to make a special, a little separate argument to handle the cases that show if one of these things really is minus infinity, then an argument like this will force the other one to be minus infinity as well, and so I get minus infinity identically. Similar argument. And the fact that I have a uniform Lipschitz constant here is kind of useful because it gives me a lot of compactness in order to observe that the soup is actually going to be attained. So let me say a little something about this property also. From the definition of UC, one gets that one has UC of y is equal to inf cxy minus uxy over all x, which is less than cxy minus ux. And so that says that u of x is less than cxy minus UCY, and this is true for all y and y. And so if it's true for all y, then it's also true when I take an infimum. Of U double transform. So that's this property here. What's also true is that because there is a minus sign here in this definition, if I replace U by some U tilde, which is larger than U, then U tilde transform will be smaller than U transform. And so that means that inequalities get reversed by applying this transform. And so this inequality here will, applying C, gives that UC is actually bigger than UCCC. And on the other hand, we already checked this, and so applying this to U, which has been transformed once already, on the other hand, if I call this A and B, 2A to UC, gives and so these two inequalities complement each other to prove 2B. Okay. So now I'm in good shape to show that the supremum is attained. And by the kind of functions that I want, namely, choose a maximizing sequence. Let me call it K, since n is the dimension. Lim as k goes to infinity of uk vk is the sup of juv on phi. And notice that both of these guys are probability measures. So I can add a constant to u, provided I subtract the same constant from v without changing j. And so without loss of generality, replace. What do I want to do? I want to fix some point in the support of mu. And so that so the new UK satisfies UK of x naught equals 0. And since I've added the same constant U and subtracted it from V, the new U and V still belong to phi C. So I should probably I mean, there should be hats somewhere, but I won't worry about them. So, and I haven't changed the value of j. And now I have this family of Lib. So the point of doing this is to make sure that when I take the limit as k goes to infinity, these values don't march off to plus or minus infinity. So now, this is an, what do you call it, an equicontinuous family of functions. On the compact set X. I moved too quickly. So so I have to be careful because before I do this step, I should, without loss of generality, I should use these observations, and this observation. So, without loss of generality, replace uk vk by uk vk transform, uk uk transform. So this is still in the set of competitors, and it only makes J larger. That was what we observed up here and here. And then let me replace this thing here by transforming this again. So since this was in the set of competitors, this is again in the set of competitors. And since the cost j of this thing is larger than the cost j of this thing, which was larger than the cost j of this thing, and I started with a maximizing sequence, this must still be a maximizing sequence. And this, so this is still a maximizing sequence. And now the advantage that I've gained by doing this is that these are all equi-Lipschitz functions, whereas these were not. And moreover, this guy is clearly a transform of this, and if I transform this fellow, then by this equality here, the transform of this, so the transform of the second thing is the first thing, and the transform of the first thing is also the second thing by this equality here. And so now I've got what I wanted at the beginning, at least for these approximating, for the sequence of maximizers. And now I am, so let me call these double transform things UK and VK. These guys are all Lipschitz with constant LX. These guys are all Lipschitz with constant LY. And I want to extract a subsequence of these things, so now let me modify by constants to make sure that one of them stays zero at some point in support of mu. And so now I have an equi-Lipschitz family of functions on the compact set X. and VK, so this is these are, the UKs are now equal to the UK double transforms, and the VKs are now equal to the UK transforms, our equi-Lipschitz on Y. And so what's the sort of standard compactness result that you're sort of dying to apply when you get an equi-Lipschitz family of functions on a compact set? Max? Yep. And what's the conclusion of the Ascoli-Arzelà theorem? Yes. And so if it's bounded, then what? In what topology? Yep. So. are bounded on X. Escoli Arzela implies a subsequence converges uniformly. I.e. the L infinity norm or the soup norm on X. And so in this case, I get the boundedness from the Lipschitz from the fact that U stays zero at X naught and the Lipschitz control. So this is zero, and let's say this is no bigger than the diameter of X. And uniform convergence is very nice for me because that means I have no trouble taking the limit of this thing. Right. This is a probability measure. So if this is bounded by some epsilon, then the integral of epsilon is 1. And so this thing converges by dominated convergence theorem, I guess, or whatever. So my functional is even looking continuous in the topology that I'm getting convergence in. And let's see, the same thing happens for VKY. And I should check the boundedness again. And the boundedness should come from the fact that VKY is equal to UK transform. Okay, so I was a little sloppy here. I only showed boundedness above, and I need to use the reverse Lipschitz inequality to show boundedness below. Also. again by minus this constant. So this is an inf over x of and I guess I get one bound from from putting in x naught here. So this is less than c of x naught y, which is less than the diameter of or max of c on xy. And what do I get the other bound from? Max?
Well, you can do the same sort of trick with vk. You now you that's a bit with uk, right? Now you instead of ukx not, you do it with vkx not.
You mean subtract off a constant?
And choose another and a subsequence of a subsequence.
No, I'm a little worried about that because. I mean, if I could.
If it converts, then if you have a constant with them, then they will convert as well.
But it's a k-dependent constant. So I have to be slightly careful. So the constant that I'm adding at each step depends on the step. And I can center the u's so that the u's don't diverge to plus or minus infinity. And I need to be clear that doing that doesn't make the vk's diverge to plus or minus infinity. And so the danger is that if I try to do this again to make the VK's constant at some point, then I might make the UK's blow up or something. So I get a cheap upper bound. On the other hand, this is a continuous function on a compact set. And so this int is attained by some x tilde. And I have a bound on the UKs already. And so this is bigger than you're right, extracting a subsequence, I still have convergence of this, so another subsequence. Now it's actually true that that u infinity is the c transform of v infinity, and v infinity is the c transform of u infinity. But it would be a few more steps to check it, and I don't feel like doing a few more steps. So it's easy to it's easy to simply replace v infinity by the c transform of u infinity. That only makes the cost go up. Replace u infinity by its own double c transform, that only makes the cost go up again, and it now satisfies the advertised conditions. So. And so far, everything I've done is very, very general. I haven't used any special structure of the cost. Of course, all I've shown is that the supremum is attained and by these sort of special functions, and I'm now in a position to use those. So after the break, I will use those functions to show that I can construct an optimal measure between mu and nu, which attains the supremum and uniquely so. Other questions? Yeah. Right. Not all maxima are of this form, but you can always find the maximum of this form, and these are the convenient ones to work with.
But later on, for the conditions for the cost that you will implement later on, they will be in a necessary condition, right?
Oh, you mean you want... So you can give a necessary and sufficient condition for gamma to achieve this infimum in terms of the existence of a potential U, which is its own double transform, such that in a rough sense, support of gamma is contained in some kind of subdifferential of U, except it's not the, it, because we've changed from this cost to this cost is not the ordinary subdifferential, but some kind of subdifferential that depends on C. And that's a general theorem, I guess probably due to Ruschendorf, which doesn't use any hypotheses on the cost. Yeah?
Can we use the same sort of approach that we did for the quadratic cost on this cost, replacing all the products by C, X, Y, and so forth?
Yep. In fact, it's sort of, yes, in fact, yes. And that's not what I'm doing. So I'm doing something different, and you can also, of course, use this approach for the quadratic cost. So I'm showing you a different proof for the quadratic cost. It's, this one's more variational in flavor. So what I'm going to do in the second half is perturb around this maximum and show that the Euler-Lagrange equation actually tells you something about the